This is the Australian Lure Fishing Podcast, where we're building Australia's largest and most comprehensive resource for Australian lure fishers. Join us every Monday, Wednesday and Friday as we break down the locations, the techniques and the tackle that you need to catch more fish on lures. Or visit our website, doclures.com, to get the free resources and tools that will help you to achieve the results that you want. So if improving your lure fishing is your aim, then settle in and enjoy the top information shared by our hosts and by top lure fishers from all around Australia.
Hi everybody and welcome to the Australian Lure Fishing Podcast. I'm your guest host Andrew Deeth and on behalf of Greg Vinyl, I'm recording a series on targeting and hopefully catching big brim. Today we have a special guest. Cullum is the man behind Outback Brimmer Baits and creator of the Muscle Vibe. Now Cullum is a very accomplished brim angler and has caught some huge brim in his time. Looking through his Instagram account is an inspiring event. Posted there, he has some of the biggest brim I've ever seen. So welcome to the show, Cullum Dowell.
Thanks for having me and g'day to all the listeners out there.
No worries. Like I said, your Instagram account, just some of the fish on that is just amazing.
Yeah, we're quite fortunate down on the south coast of West Australia. Here we've got numerous amount of systems within that 300-400k region and they all contain really good sized fish.
Yeah. So whereabouts do you live, more or less?
I live in Albany.
Okay. Cool.
So pretty much the most southern tip of West Australia.
Right. Have you been there for a while? Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up here. Spent the first 18 years here and then went walkabout for 7 years. Did all the up north and Pilbara, Perth, Mandurah.
Okay.
Fished all along the way and then back here.
Right. And aside from brim, which is the obvious, is there anything else you like to target on lures?
I'm pretty biased. You will catch me hanging out with mates, doing a little bit of inshore here and there. Maybe when the mulloway on, you might find me up the Cowgon River chasing them. Other than that, yeah, my skills all lie in one basket.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, what size mulloway do you get over there? What's a good one?
We've got a genetically modified type mulloway here. They don't grow as big as an East Coast mulloway or, you know, up the West Coast. So a really big mulloway here is probably 1.2 metres. And Murdoch studies have shown that they're actually twice the age of, you know, a 1.2 metre fish over on the East Coast as well. So,
right.
Yeah, slightly isolated population over here. So there's no more, like, genetic modifications to obviously enhance the genetics. So,
yeah, I was going to say, mate, a 1.2, I'm pretty happy to see one of those. Haven't reached that yet. So, yeah, be very happy to see one.
It's a, you know, once in a lifetime fish. That's awesome.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's get down to big brim. So last week after we chatted, which was for the first time, you sent me a photo of an absolutely huge brim. So why don't you take us back to that day and tell us how you caught that brim and just walk us through it, like what sort of day was, what sort of conditions and, you know, how you caught it.
The funny thing was I knew I was going to catch a massive brim that day.
Right.
When I woke up, I was driving out there. The conditions were lining up perfect. We had a warm air mass, low pressure system coming through, which just screams big brim. So it was a low from the northwest. Whenever they come through, you've got to be on the water over here because that's your best opportunity to catch a big brim. And it was approaching, probably going to hit about 10 o'clock that morning. So
yeah.
It was middle of winter as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I had, and traditionally our, obviously winter fronts come from the southwest, so it's cold air mass.
Yeah.
So I knew I had a couple of hours before the bite would shut down and the low pressure would come through. So I had this little 30 mil resin cast vibe that this guy on, I found this guy on Instagram and he made these really cool looking vibes.
Anyway. Yeah, okay.
So, and it actually looked like muscle. So I'll probably post a photo to show you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew the spot I was going to go to and first cast, I missed the spot, so I wound in and put another cast in and yeah. It just got ticked on the way down. And, yeah, this very, very stubborn fight, big old head shakes. And during the fight, I felt my lure, I thought at the time, I thought a hook pulled.
Yeah.
But the other one was still hooked. Yep. It's that little jarring feeling.
Yeah.
It makes your heart flutter.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was pissing down by that time, and I got this fish near the boat. It was just me fishing with my dog.
Okay.
And I got in the net, and I knew it was over 50.
Wow.
And I looked at the broom's mouth, and what had happened was the split ring and hook was in one side of the mouth, and the lure was on the other side of the mouth. So what had happened was I actually pulled the hooks on it because the split ring pulled open, and then I rehooked it on the other side of its mouth.
Right.
Because you couldn't, there's no way a little 30 mil lure, it doesn't outstretch the length of a broom's mouth. So
yeah.
I was very fortunate to catch that fish, and I got a quick photo, and it was, the photo turned out really good, and it was 51 centimetres to the tip.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just went home. And
right, one fish and out of there?
Yeah, I don't know why. On the way home, I just feel satisfied. And I've heard that with a lot of bass anglers too, when they catch their, you know, double-digit first one, or they just get off the lake, and it's like, oh, it's a phenomena.
yeah, that's really cool. I mean, 50 centimetres is the holy grail of brim, and that's just a cracker. And when you fish that, you said you put your first cast in the spot. What were you casting to?
There was this little rubble patch that it just sets up really good in winter.
Okay.
And obviously big brim are quite habitual with what they do and where they, at certain times of the year, and where they sit. And the prime areas, the prime real estate for where they feed, where bait would come around that corner and they're sitting right there. Or
yeah, okay.
Just those little subtleties. And in previous experience, I've caught a lot of good fish in that very zone. So that was the first spot I was going to.
Yeah, so basically there's a little rubble patch just around a corner. What sort of water depth are you looking at?
8 foot it was.
Okay.
Yeah, but they suspend there. They don't sit on the bottom, so because the rubble comes up a little bit, but it's got an 8 foot depth to it.
Okay. And is it tidal there? Like, is there water flow to make them suspend, or is it just a closed system?
Yeah, it is quite.
Okay.
There is a lot of flow, especially because we'd had two previous systems, so they were two big rain events, so they were perched up pretty well, like feeding up before the spawn.
Yeah, okay. Well, mate, that's a good story. 51 centimetre brim. I actually only know one other guy personally that's caught a brim over 50. So there you go. All right. Well, let's dive into where you like to fish. So what sort of locations are you fishing? Like, are you fishing tidal systems, closed systems? And then we'll go into where in the systems you like to fish.
Yeah, so we obviously have both down here. We've got like tidal systems. Our competition systems are all tidal down here. So the Blackwood, Walpole, Albany, and then east of town there is tidal systems that, well, they are at the moment.
Yeah.
And you do get that bite window in all those systems.
Yeah.
Just depending on what the tide's doing, but also fish a lot of closed systems as well, mainly not the inlet so much, but definitely up the rivers of those systems where they kind of a bit more proactive in their feeding habits.
Right. So in those systems, you prefer to fish higher in the system generally, or is it seasonal, or what's the story?
Very seasonal, yep.
Okay, so leading into winter then, whereabouts are you headed, upstream, downstream?
Downstream? Yeah. I think they like that influx of water and it just, the bait pushing in for winter.
Yeah.
There's got a lot going for a downstream area during winter, and it's bizarre because it doesn't quite fit with the genetics of West Coast fish. Like in the previous ABT competitions, like if you weren't up the very back of the Murray and the Swan River, you literally donutted. So
right,
it sets up different here to there, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. Interesting, because it's, yeah, like for me, I'm fishing yellowfin brim, so I presume they're all black brim over there, and yeah, a little bit of a different proposition.
Yeah, exactly. Different habits, yep.
Fair enough. Okay, so if you're fishing downstream, what sort of structure are you fishing? You're fishing deep or snags, or what's there to target?
Yeah, mainly isolated timber and isolated rocks, weed beds, broken ground, and also channels. Because the fish this time of year, they're on the move, they're looking for a feed, they're setting up for, I'm not sure, 10 or 15 minutes, having a feed, moving off. They're just constantly on the move, and you can tell that with just their shoulders. They're quite big in the shoulders.
Yeah.
This time of year. So you can just tell they're running fish, they're migrational, and yeah, maybe they're just feeding up big time before the spawn, before they move into the rivers, and then they'll feed up at the mouth of the rivers and then they'll move upstream just on the other side of winter for a spawn.
Okay. So on any given day, if you're out there fishing, you find you'll come into patches of them, or like can you see them going through on the sound or that sort of thing? Or how are you targeting them, or you're running around spot hopping? What's your sort of plan?
Yeah, a lot of spot hopping, because we've found that they're in little packs of 2 to 5 brim, and they're little wolf packs. So when you come across them, you'll get a bite and you'll catch a fish. But it's just coming across them. There's a lot of ground to cover down here, so we're always on the move. We're never really set up in one position. That's what you do during winter, because you know there's big fish there and you can aggravate them to get a bite.
Yeah.
You just got to work it differently. But yeah, this time of year, keep on the move, keep on the hunt.
And are you seeing them on the sounder, or are you just hitting, like habitually hitting just different locations? Like how are you finding them?
Finding them.
You're just finding? Yeah, okay. So you're not going around sounding for them?
I mean, yeah, I've been doing it long enough to know where they are at what time of year. So don't really need a sounder as much as you would over on the East Coast, especially in those feeding areas where you've kind of nullified everything down and you know they should be there. And if they're not there, you move to the other feeding area and you just keep spot hopping your way around.
Yeah, okay. So it's a combination of just having fished the water a bit, time on the water and yeah, I guess time of year. Whereas over here, like say we fish the basin at the moment, most of the time I'm going to use my sounder and go looking for them, and I'm not going to have you're not blind casting. There's too much water to cover. Like you have to see them if you really want to get into them.
Yeah, exactly. And on the other side, I mean, they're not sitting that deep here as well. So forward facing, if, you know, I pull my finger out and buy something like that, that would be the ultimate. But if you know they're there, then I guess you don't really need it.
Yeah, I was looking at a mate's one who was scanning under boats and pontoons, and you could see the fish just moving around. So you could see it on the boats where they were sitting and then not on the boats where they weren't. So good tool over here. All right. When you head out, if you're chasing big brim, I think you may have answered this a little bit before, but do you do any research on weather and that sort of stuff? Like, are you actively searching, or are you just going fishing when you can?
Yeah, I don't really actively look at I mainly look at the wind to see if you can access these areas or not, or plan if you're going up a river or in the harbour. But like I said, if there is a low pressure system on the way, you've got to be out on the water, especially when we have that wind lull during the couple of hours before it hits.
Okay.
That's absolute prime time to be out there.
So it's like the calm before
tides,
the storm.
I'm not really concerned about tides because, you know, on a comp day, you never know what you're going to get with tides. And with tides here, there's always bite windows wherever you are on any given tide. Like if you're on a low tide and coming, you've got the bridges because the water's still dirty and get that fresh influx of harbour water.
Yeah.
And that cancels out going upstream. But if it's a high tide, you get up, get past the rocks upstream and target those fish up there.
With your bite windows, are you using any software for that? Like any apps, or you're just observing that there is bite windows where they bite better times than others?
So my fiance tracked down this book, and it's called Moon Up, Moon Down. And it was so hard to find a copy of this book. And I think it cost about $120 secondhand, probably read hundreds of times before. And it's a really old book, and it's how nature works. And, you know, all the cows in the paddock are sitting down at the same time. And so why are they all sitting down? Then they'll get up and start feeding again. And it's that moon up, moon down phase where it's kind of like an almanac. Very interesting. And it does work for fishing as well. So when you're out on the water and you hear the kookaburras, that determines a condition change. So if you've got a hot bite window and you hear the kookaburras, I'll guarantee you the fishing is going to get very tough after that, because either the pressure's plummeting, or there's rain on the way, or there's a wind change. It all works in unison. I don't take a diary, but it's something that you kind of, if you're intuitive to it, you can learn along the way. And it's the same over east. When I fished, Lake Macquarie, and all the cicadas were going off. And then they'd all just stop.
Yeah.
And the bite would stop. You know, you're not getting a bite. And then an hour or two later, cicadas would start going and then the brim would start whining again.
Right, okay. Well, that's really interesting. I've not heard of that book, so I'll definitely look that up. Hopefully they've put it on Kindle so we can all have a look at it. But yeah, moon up, moon down. Do you know how old it is?
Oh, it's very old, yeah. Incredibly old. I couldn't tell you exactly when, but...
No, that's okay.
They don't write editions anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, I'll definitely have a look and see if we can find a copy. Stuff like that can be invaluable.
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah.
All right. So if we're talking big brim, so you're talking very big brim over there. Let's run through some of the tackle in terms of rods, lines, leader and that sort of stuff. Like are you a braid and leader or straight through? Like what's your preference?
I've always fished braid. Just a confidence thing. You've got a lot going for your fishing braid, but I did fish with Chris Hickson about a month ago and I was watching him fish 6 pounds straight through and he didn't lose a fish. And he just, every single big head shake and lunge, it just could be buffered by both line and rod. So very envious after watching him. I don't think he actually got busted off and I got busted off a couple of times. So that's something I want to try and move into. Is that straight through concept.
Yeah, just for the extra stretch.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like it's a bit of a divided field on that. Some people like Chris and Steve Morgan and what have you are very much straight through for certain applications, some more than others. And then there's other guys that are definitely braid and leader. So yeah, I've struggled with the straight through just with the stretch and the lack of feel. But
that's just the hardest thing to just go back like that. But I mean, he didn't pull any hooks, so definitely got some benefits. And obviously, if you're fishing clear water impoundments and things like that, you've just got another extra benefit going for you.
Yeah, that's it, and quick reties and no FG knots while you're on the boat, so that's kind of good.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And just on that note, if you're a braid and leader, are you FG knots and uni knots as terminal, or where are you at with that?
I actually couldn't tell you what knot I tie.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you what it is. It doesn't matter where I look, it's got a different name to it, so... I've just been running it for, 12 or 13 years. I think mate Deacon, he actually taught me the knot.
Okay.
Well, he probably got Bryson and then Greg taught me, I don't know, but very habitual with how I tie my knots. And, you know, you lose the odd fish to a busted leader knot every now and then, but generally it's because you haven't retied that day. So can't really fault this little knot I do, but. Yeah, it's funny to say, but I've never tied an FG. Wouldn't know how to tie it. I just look at people with the line wrapped around their toes, and my brother ties a mean FG knot. So if it ever comes to that, I'll get him to teach me how to do it.
I was going to say, it's like everyone, all these things can be learned if you need to. And in terms of your lure, what are you tying straight onto your lure? Is it the same knot as your leader knot, or is it something different?
No, it's usually on soft plastic, on a jig head, it's a loop knot with the... With hard bodies, I've been using the split ring lately, which I've never really used, but I've had a few issues with getting nicked where it's maybe just a subtle low composite toe point.
Yeah.
Maybe it's got some edge on it, and I've lost a couple of good fish to that. So I've just been tying to the split ring and haven't had no issues.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was going to say I used to tie just a lock blood knot, but recently I've gone to just a uni knot, which I think is stronger. So there you go. All right, let's run across to lures. So around the country, kind of depends on where you go, there's kind of different answers to this. But if you had to pick three lures to go out over the next, say, 3 months or so, what would you start with? What would be your three lures to catch big brim?
Yeah, obviously I'm a sucker for my own product, so the mask. Versatile, you can kind of use it anywhere. You can use it up a river because, you know, brim would have to be living under a rock to not know what a mussel is. So they work anywhere. The Daiwa double clutch, 60 or a 48, probably rotate between the two. I've only just started using the 48, but I'm very, very impressed. It's just got that little bit more depth to it. Just so good on the slow roll or the twitch. Yeah, I'm a sucker for those. And you probably have to run with the soft plastic. And my pick would be a Z-Man 2.5-inch swim, rigged upside down so you get the tail flutter on the drop. But I have been using the Daiwa Bait Junkie 2.5-inch minnows and they they work just as good, especially in that mudblood colour.
All right. So let's go back through those and just go through some techniques and rigging and what have you. So I think we'll start with the, we might as well start with the Z-Man. So you've got that rigged upside down on what sort of jig head?
Oh, 1/16 or a 1/12.
Yep. So not hit. So a jig head, not hidden weight?
I haven't used hidden weights for a long time, but most of my fishing is quite, I guess it's really called power fishing, where you just, you're beating snags and you're not really working it out. You're not really focusing on too much finesse. You just want to, just depending where they're sitting in the water column, you want to get it down to the bottom and underneath the snag or moving with the current. So I like to fish soft plastics is, you know, casting, kind of premeditating where they're sitting underneath the snag. So they're sitting metre and a half down, casting that metre or two upstream and letting the current bring it down to that exact strike zone.
Right. So once you've cast out, you're letting it sink down to what you think is the appropriate depth, and then you're just twitching it or just trying to let it waft through, or?
Depends what they're eating, because they work really well on a slow roll as well. But a twitch if it's on the bottom, but it all depends on the day. Sometimes I'll just cast in, let it waft with the current if in those winter conditions, and let it run its course underneath the snag. Might do a couple of twitches or a little wind at the end of the snag, then wind and cast at the other one.
Yeah, okay.
They're just actively feeding fish. I'm not trying to force a bite.
Yeah, yeah. And with that sort of those sorts of weights on a slim swim, it's going to sink pretty slowly, I would imagine.
It's quite buoyant, so they hold up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you tied into the snags, like you're getting fouled up a bit, or you're trying to fish the front of the snag, or how's that look?
Well, front of the snags, generally. The front tips of them, that's where you find the most active fish.
Okay.
And, you know, if they're right deep in the snags and they're sulking, like, I'll just go do something else, really.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
I'm a bit, when it comes to snag fishing, I get a little bit impatient with it. You know, you can handle it for an hour or two.
Yep.
But then you want to go do something else, just clear the mind and go fish flats or rubble piles and just bounce your way around, and then you might hit snags again. Just, yeah, I can't beat snags all day.
Yeah, okay. And just, can you go back through the upside down rigging while you do that?
On the drop, you get a lot more action out of the tail of it.
Okay.
Any minnow type plastic, you'll notice it'll tail be working on the drop.
Okay.
A lot better.
All right. I'll have to try that because it's not something I've done except for when the lure's ripped out of the back and I've just turned it up the other way. So, yeah, I'll definitely have a play with that. All right. So, Daiwa double clutches. So, this is something that I think is used a lot more in sort of Victoria and maybe Western Australia compared to, say, Sydney. Talk to me about that. Like, how are you using those?
I like using them as predominantly jerk baits. So, make sure that the hooks hold the buoyancy. So, it suspends perfectly, because sometimes, especially with the light gauge DKKs, or just depending on what the salinity is doing at the time, like if there's a bit of fresh on top, it'll obviously float. So just matching the hook to the lure to make it suspend is the big thing. And it sometimes depends. You might have to go with, if you want to still get the big hook gate, you have to go a decoy, not a size 12 owner, because it obviously, especially with the 48s, I think they sink slowly with a bigger hook. So it's pretty much like what the guys do in Tassie, really, but with more of a deeper diving jerkbait. Is a couple of big whacks, let it sit there, run it every now and then to just make sure that you haven't gone through it, you haven't ripped it through weed, and just really, really patient retrieve, because these big brim, generally they don't hit it straight away. They'll just tail it, turn, tail it, come back, have a look, and just keep doing that until they get pissed off and eat it or take their area, and they just want that thing out of their area.
Yeah, okay.
So a lot of people with jerk baits, and they especially with brim, they either work it too much or they put too much into a slow roll, say slow roll switch.
Yeah.
It's one or the other with me with that. Like generally a jerk bait cast for me is almost a minute.
Okay.
Keeping it in the zone and keeping it knocking it and pissing them off.
And how hard are you hitting it? Like, is it a twitch or is it just a full-on whack or both?
I'll start the twitch with slack line. So it'll only be a 10-centimetre movement of the lure, but it's quick and it's erratic because you're whacking the slack line, which will really jerk the bait.
Yeah, okay. I once fished a comp in Naruma where we were really struggling to get fish, and I remember I was bored and pretty over it, and I'd thrown what's the OSP deep diver?
The dunk.
I was throwing a dunk, and I'd just thrown it out, and honestly, similar to what you were talking about, but I was hitting it like I was like the rod was a baseball bat. Anyway, it came up hard on a brim. So yeah, the thing was being belted like within an inch of its life. It was enough to get a strike and, you know, fill my bag, which was pretty nice. So with your divers, you've got the 60s and the 48s. Do you have a preference, or how do you choose between the two?
Well, I've only just started using the 48. Chris gave them to me a couple of weekends ago to have a play with, and I can't fold them.
Yeah.
I do like the 60s for that slightly shallower water.
Okay.
I think the 48s dive a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
But they're such a versatile little lure. Like, they've got that depth which really opens up for, like, those suspended snag fish, because here they don't really sit too high up on the snag. Like, they're probably doing, like, it's playing lake, so they sit really high up. Here it's mainly that metre depth where they'll suspend on a snag. Where kind of where the salt wedge is, I think.
Yeah, okay. Are you fishing mostly snags with these, or are you hitting the gravel beds with them as well, or weed edges, or what's all of the above?
Yeah, weed edges, gravel beds, in the harbour, out on the flat. Yeah, don't really fish, you know, bridges and bits and pieces like that with hard bodies. I'm sure it'd work really well, but we don't really have the bridges and that down here. We've got, you know, one bridges system, and they can, you have a few casts at it and you catch a fish and they all spook. So.
And move on.
Yeah.
What sort of colours are you looking at?
Really natural colours, but I do like the pitch black with the orange belly, the matte black colour. That is a really good colour. I got a 47 on that the other week.
Nice.
And the Carmen wet red, I think that's in everyone's tackle box. That's a really nice colour. And also, it's discontinued now, but it was black with pink, had like a pink chin and pink dots or stripes on its back.
Okay.
And that's gone. I bought as many as I could.
Yep.
Because once the diver colour's gone, it's pretty hard to get it back.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to get someone to paint them for you.
Guys are a bit weird with buying pink lures, but pink's the colour that a brim can see the best in dark water.
Right.
Not gold, not black, because it creates a silhouette of pink.
Interesting. Let's go on to your mussel. And tell us, firstly, what it is and how you fish it and, you know, what sort of hooks and stuff it has on it.
It's concept thought of in 2017. It was the mussel vibe. I was given by one of the old-timers here in WA all the gear to make them, because he made a few casts himself of just a little tippy, really, with a single hook coming out of it. And always thought there's a lot of potential to make this better than and more versatile than what this is. So I learned how to make it, learned how to do it, but could never get it right. And it was a year or so ago, I started working at the mussel farm down here, and you watch the brim eat the mussels, and I've just got to revisit this idea. And, you know, by that time, I felt pretty accountable, because I told a lot of anglers about it and told a lot of people about it, couldn't keep my mouth shut. So word got out, and a few people have taken it on board, just because of that. But it took a long time to perfect. Every morning I'd come home, make a prototype, go down to work 10, 15 minutes early, have a swim, doesn't work, think all day how to make it work. And we eventually got it. And now it's at a point where we can make, you know, hundreds a week, and we're still going backwards with it. But
Yeah, fair enough.
It's just such a versatile concept to us, where you can fish it on the flats, we can make a colour like a picky, and like a sand cockle colour. Like, there's a lot of different avenues with the one lure. But I personally just choose to make a black one, and I'll fish it up against bridges and rocks and, you know, isolated structure, snags, or on the drop-off.
And how are you working it? Like, you're working like a blade, or you're working it more like a crab where it's a really slow retrieve? What's your go-to there?
I'm still learning how to do it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, obviously you sell them to guys, and they come back and give you feedback, and they show you a photo of a good fish they've caught. And, my first question is, how did you catch it? Like, what did you use? And 9 times out of 10, it's cast against a pylon or, you know, under a pontoon, it's just baitating, you know, within the first half of the water column or as it's got to the bottom, they've rattled on it. And that's how I catch most of my fish on it. But I do like using it as a reaction bait because it's got a great little vibration. So you can cast it in and don't get anything on the first fall and you rip it really quickly, only, you know, only a 10-centimetre lift and just let it settle again. And in those darker conditions, that will get a reaction bite out of them. So, yeah, pretty much like a blade, but not as erratic.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Now, you said you're down at the mussel farm, you're watching brim eat lures. Are you able to see how they approach them? Are they coming up underneath or are they coming in and smashing it or how do they take them?
Depends on their mood. So, you know, a fair few times you drop a mussel in there and it's like they all couldn't be bothered doing the hard work.
Yeah.
And they just let it go. But when they wanted it, that usually the big one would split the pack and grab it and swim off. And he obviously wouldn't eat it right there. And then where there's 100 other brim, he'd go off and eat it. And most of the bites you get, you don't actually feel the traditional kick. You'll just see your line move.
Yeah.
Or you'll see your line rattle like on a cranker crab. So that gives me great confidence to know that they've just pick that mussel up and they're swimming off to eat it. And you know that that's what they've done because generally both trebles are in each corner of the mouth. So they're cradling it in their mouth rather than like picking at it.
Yeah, that's interesting. What sort of, if you're throwing them, what sort of line class are you throwing them with?
I throw them pretty light because I can kind of afford the lure.
You can make them.
5 or 6 pound leader.
Yeah, okay.
I don't actually fish heavier than that. If I'm losing, if they're just too close to structure, I'm losing them. I'll go do something else.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. What sort of hooks they come with standard? Are they a generic hook or are they?
Yeah, they come with decoy size 14s and decoy split rings.
Okay. Cool.
But it all depends on what I can get.
Yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, I'll use owner size 14.
Yeah.
It all depends on the bite too because we've found that the yellowfin brim, with how they eat it, decoys suit them a lot better.
Right.
With the black brim, with just how their mouth's constructed, they have a real sucky type bite, then the owners work really well if they're just kind of picking it up and mooching on it.
Yeah.
It's interesting just the feedback you get with it.
Yeah. It's funny. I was fishing Captain Cook Bridge here in Botany Bay and I'm chasing dewies and I hooked up solid on the bottom. Anyway, I pulled up this great big clump of rock and what have you, and in like 6 metres of water, it was all covered in mussels. And I thought, wow, that's a little bit telling. Half the time, you don't even really know they're there.
Yeah, no, they're everywhere, and they're getting more prolific as well, which is a really good thing.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that's fished a comp would, or not anyone, I guess, but if you fished a comp and you've had a live well full of brim, the amount of times there's mussel shells in the bottom of the live well when you're finished, because, yeah, they've chewed them up and spat them out. So they're all eating them, I think.
Yeah, it still baffles me.
Yeah.
Well, no one's thought of this.
Yeah, and I wonder what the brim thinks when they see this mussel just randomly floating down through the water column. But anyway, I guess they think there's a bit of lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's really good. That's 3 good lures. Is there anything else you want to throw in as a bonus? You got any surface lures or anything else that you like?
It's like for a bent minnow, I rig them slightly differently, and a lot of people that know me know this already, but what I do is I put a suspending, a little atomic weighted suspending dot.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I'll put it underneath the bent pin on the downside.
Yeah.
And what that does is, depending on how they're biting, because obviously sometimes on a bent minnow, you know, as soon as you drag it under, they spook, or as soon as you stop the lure, they'll eat it. But with a big black brim, when they're curious, they're not quite committed, what really helps is to be able to obviously nod that rod tip in a timely fashion and get that lure going under and then have that lure being able to suspend there, because without that a little sticky weight, obviously the lure float up to the top, and just being able to suspend it gives the brim a bit more time to kind of face up and do its thing and then eat it.
Yeah, now okay.
That's a bit of a changer with fishing surf, especially in a little bit or the colder times of year. It's really good for when they're kind of getting up and about after the spawn, you know, they want to get moving again, and I've caught some good fish during that September, October time on that rig sent me know.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, over here, like around the country, we seem to have different results for the same lure. Like often we'll be looking to get the bent minnow under the surface after a few twitches. But I think you said that that sometimes that'll spook them over there. So, it's
Yeah, and like I said, it's a daily thing where they just change their mind with how they want to eat it.
Yeah.
And you've just got to, there's four different ways and you've just got to work it out quickly. Otherwise, you're in your time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that covers all of our lures and lines and techniques and what have you. Now, the other day we had a little bit of a chat, and you spoke to me about a recapture of a brim that anyway, I'll let you tell the story, but you also mentioned the big brim of creatures of habit. Did you want to go through that story for me?
It was happened twice. So it was about a year apart on both occasions, maybe a little bit shy of a year, but I've captured the same fish as another angler, and he pointed out to me, we both fish the same waters, and he's like, oh, great, because that's this fish, and he sent me a photo of it, and lucky we got a photo of the same side of it, and it had one bung eye, and because his hook went through it.
Right, so it was a very distinct fish.
Yeah, it was very distinct. It had some dorsal fin spines missing and broken.
Yep.
It had a funny shaped head, and it was very, very easily identified as the fish he caught. And he was actually quite rapt because he was saying it took about 15 to 20 minutes to actually revive the fish.
Yeah, okay.
You know, once he caught in the kayak, the hook was so embedded in its eye, it was very hard to get out.
Yep.
And he had took it in shore, got a photo. You know, it's a bit of an ordeal with a big fish. You've got to be quite mindful of how long you've actually got these things out of the water for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Revived it, kind of swam off a little bit slowly on its side, and he was a bit fearful that it would die.
But
I recaptured it about a year later, and it was not far from where he caught it. So it was very positive, and big brim might not be as smart as people think.
Hey, well, there you go. And did it take, what lures did it take? Take the same lure twice, or do you know?
He caught it on a bigger hard body, and I caught it on a Karanka vibe.
Well, there you go. So just two different lures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. And you said it happened another time as well where you've caught the same fish as another angler?
Yeah, I caught it. And I caught it in April of the same year he caught it in December. So it was only, 7 months apart. Yes. And it was from exactly the same spot.
Right.
And it was exactly the same fish, 100%. Even when I saw it, I was netting it, I was like, I've caught that fish before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he caught that on it was 47 and a half when he caught it. It was 47 when I caught it. So I caught it on I don't know what I caught it on. It might have even been a Karanka vibe again. It's all the fish. And then he caught it on a mussel.
Yeah, okay. Even better.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good. So it's interesting that the big fish, once that you can catch them again, they're in the same sort of location. So it would be that possibly they are habitual and do head back to the same place, which is helpful.
Yeah. Oh, even if they're not that, they're really residential.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe they might move up the river to spawn and they live there for, 10 months of the year and 2 months in the river. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that covers most of the things that I wanted to go through. So if people wanted to reach out to you and ask any questions, whereabouts would they be able to contact you? Where would be the easiest place?
I've really crushed my exposure down to just Instagram.
Yep.
Just because it's too hard to maintain.
Sure.
Different avenues of how I do my social media at the moment with everything going on.
So maybe not too much contact, maybe just a little bit of perusing your account more than reaching out, I guess.
I'll reply to absolutely everyone.
Oh, beautiful.
With anything they want, whatever questions they have regarding anything. So
yeah, cool.
Very, very happy to answer any questions that anyone has. Probably just not locations, but
fair enough. And where is that? Is it the Outback Brimmer one?
Yeah, Outback / or _ Brimmer _ bait is where you'll find me.
Cool. All right. Well, mate, we're just about to wrap this up. I'll have one final question, but look, thanks so much for agreeing to come on the show. Mate, you shared some stuff that that was both informative and interesting. Some of the stuff which I'd not heard before. So I look forward to going back through and having a listen to this. So for anybody that's out there on a tough day where they're struggling to catch a big brim or struggling to catch a brim at all, is there anything that you would suggest to them to put the odds in their favor of, let's just say, catching a fish in general on one of the really tough days?
Well, I needed this a couple of weeks ago in the ABT because I double donated in Mandurah, so I could have used some of my own advice. But I think it's just to get out of the area, refresh, go try something new, go up river, go down river, just do something drastic. If you're not getting bites, if you know they're there and you're just waiting for, you know, wind or a condition change, then hang around and stick it out. But if you're not sure where they are or what they're doing, do something completely different.
Yeah.
And if you've got a confidence bait, just stick with it. Stick with your soft plastic or your hard body. If you've caught fish in that system before on that, or, you know, if you're fishing a system that you've never fished, you've obviously done a little bit of research, and pick something and stick with it and play the percentages.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. I think that's good advice. And I think there was the only one that had a pretty quiet trip.
Yeah. I mean, the guys upriver had it worked out, and Chris Hickson in the canals, I think he caught 5 of his 10 legals off one jetty. So that goes to show how hard it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, you missed that jetty. It's a very different day.
Exactly.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, there you have it, Mr. Callum Dowell. And after that conversation, I'm actually considering a trip to West Oz. I'd like to go and catch some of those 50 centimeter ones. Anyway, on behalf of myself and Greg Vinyl, tight lines, and we'll see you on the water.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Australian Lure Fishing Podcast. I hope you got some great value from today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. In fact, wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure you subscribe to ALF. And for show notes, downloads, maps, and other free resources, make sure you go to doclures.com and check out what we've got for ALF listeners there. Until the next episode, stay safe, tight lines, and may the fish be with you.